Mmm, the first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
Classic Film Vault. Welcome everyone to this edition of the Film Vault, which is one you probably haven't heard yet, because top five on-set disasters, a very robust
armpit
topic, it turns out.
Armpit disasters? But
on-set disaster, buddy. You're over the phone. You got you're melting out there in the deep valley. Let me handle this. Okay, the voice you hear is Anderson. I'm Brian Bishop, your host for top five on-set disasters. An episode you probably didn't hear because you might not be one of the illustrious Patreon subscribers since 2018. I should point out. No, 2019. We recorded this July 2nd, 2019, and aired it probably 4th of July week. Wow, how about that? Look at that. And it is rife with information. You're going to learn a lot. I learned a lot. I still think about some of the stuff I learned. It's not a joyous topic. It's not a fun topic, but it certainly is interesting. It certainly is notable and noteworthy. And like I said, you're gonna walk away with some trivia.
Yeah, it's a good episode. It was. I hate to say it. It's hard. It pains me to say this, but this is Brian's idea. And I immediately, it was one of the few times that I didn't default to no. And I'm like, you know what? Good idea there, Brad. Right, good idea. So enjoy, and there's also a little taste of the kind of thing that you're missing if you're not a Patreon member. You added value.
We've gotten a lot better.
Well, no, this is just from like 4 years ago.
That was the dark ages.
Mm-hmm. 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 All right, so enjoy. It's the full experience. You have all sorts of things in here. You might even have Flickfessions, I think. It might have been back. No, we're not doing Flickfessions. Of course, this is Patreon only, yes. It is when Logan was still with us, so that's why it's confused me. So,
did we fire him?
I'm sure we probably did fire Logan on this episode. I imagine we did.
Nice.
I have not listened to this since it came out, so I probably should have screened it first just to make sure that you're not uttering the N-word. I don't think
it's
you do,
it's unlikely.
Is it unlikely? All right.
Well, I mean, I probably used the N-word in less than half the episodes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that would be the odds are you didn't, is what you're saying. Yeah. All right, enjoy a little on-set disasters.
Film Vault. Welcome everyone to bonus Patreon episode of Film Vault. Top five on-set tragedies. Top five worst on-set tragedies. I don't have the impression Anderson we're doing on-set disasters, but you know what? These all count. Might all count as tragedies.
Yeah, I mean, just bad shit that happens on set. This is something I've wanted to do, honestly, for a couple of years because I've come across some of these horrific stories and I find them interesting and obviously very unfortunate.
I have misgivings about this episode. This is going to be heavy. It's not going to be fun.
Yeah, but I think it'll shed some light. And I just talking to some people after doing the research, you know, when you're thigh high thick and into some research on stuff, it's top of mind. And you're talking to people. I've talked about the wife about some of the things that I've uncovered and learned, and various friends of mine who like movies. And I think these are interesting tidbits. Yeah, it's not going to be a whole lot of fun. It's not going to be guffawing throughout, I wouldn't imagine. Also, this is going to probably not delight you, Brian. But it won't shock you. I have 10. I have I have five.
Ooh, this is going to be a heavy episode.
I have five more recent ones and five from back in the ancient days when safety was not a priority.
Okay.
Not a priority on the old sets there.
All of mine involve death, and many of them involve changes that were later made to the industry.
Good. See, so it's going to be like, this isn't like we're ranking our favorites, so it's a little bit different. I think there's room for that on these bonus episodes. So this is more of a an education, right? It was an education for me, for sure.
Yeah, I will. I will attempt. I might be a little verbose here, Anderson, a little talky, so cut me off whenever you heard enough, because I have a lot of facts and figures and details about sad things.
Can I cut you off now and tell you if you're going to say these things? Can you say them into the microphone?
Please. And in fact, we should also thank our Patreon members who are subscribers, and right here at the top of the episode, thank you guys for being Patreon members and listening and contributing. We appreciate it. It means a lot to us.
So who goes first?
Well, you have a lot.
And we're going to have some crossover for sure, I would imagine, which is going to, it's going to be typical for something like this if we do something like this in the future. What I was thinking might want to do as a follow-up to this is like a top five on-set romances that led to marriage.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Isn't that sweet?
That's being a nice little companion piece. Write that down for next month.
We're not going to do that.
We should do that.
Of course you would say that. Look at you.
Idea.
Brian, come on. Why would we do that?
Because it's Hollywood history.
I don't think that I have the wherewithal to be able to continue. I think I might have a top two list on that, because after finding two, I would just get fatigued. I'd be like, I can't do anymore.
You have to space out your research.
But I like these things where like we come up with actual facts, like hard, cold facts. Cold, hard facts rather than, opinions. All right, number 10 for me. This is a movie. It was released in 1978. This is one of the older modern day ones that I have on my list. So 78 is about as far back as I go in my modern collection. It's a movie called Comes a Horseman. Oh, also, this may be a first other than the list that we did of top five movies most ashamed that we have not seen. I have not seen a lot of these movies.
Same.
Yeah.
Some days I didn't know existed.
And also I'm doing what I do so often, which is leaving off a couple of the more notorious ones that we all know about. So these are 10 that are going to be less known.
I think only one of my two of them I heard about. But there is one film that of mine was never even released. The tragedy was such a big tragedy.
I got a short on my list, but it's worthy. And I also have a couple that were never actually even shot entirely because the tragedy was so profound that they just stopped shooting in the movie.
So that's it.
See? Like, if I heard that, I'd be like, I want to hear what that is.
Right.
Right?
Okay. Coming up soon.
Here's what the point of all of this is giving you, the Patreon spenders who give us $5 a month, to give you extra content, added value. And I hope that this type of thing does that for you. So
fair enough.
Number 10, back to my number 10. Is Comes a Horseman, which came out in 1978. This is starred Jane Fonda and James Caan. And at one point, you see Jason Robards' character, he's also in the movie, being dragged by a horse to his death, Brian. Here's the unfortunate fact. The same thing literally happened on the set. Robards' stunt double for the scene, Jim Shepard.
Oh, I heard about this.
Hit his head on a fence post.
That's right. And they cut away just before it happened.
Hit his head on a fence post after the horse dragging him went off course.
That feels in poor taste.
Fucking horse.
That feels in poor taste.
Resulting in his death. Now, here's what makes it super interesting is somewhat disturbingly, the scene is still in the movie, but it cuts, as Brian just stepped all over, before Shepard hits his head, which means that his final moments of life are actually in that movie.
Feels like in poor taste.
Comes a Horseman. Now, there are a lot of deaths that do get captured on, I shouldn't say a lot, but there actually are a number of, as we'll discuss here, number of deaths that are captured on film during the shoot when tragedy strikes. But in almost every case, and for my list anyways, they don't actually use the footage out of respect for the deceased and the family. So that's my number 10, Comes a Horseman, 1978. Now, going back to the olden times, Brian, are you familiar with Harold Lloyd?
Harold Lloyd,
a silent film star.
I know the name.
I learned in film school about Harold Lloyd, and I learned that he was kind of like the Charlie Chaplin, Buster Keaton, but he kind of got edged out and a lot of people stole his material, but he was like the original guy. Like, he should have been bigger than he was. But he made a film in 1920, a short film called Haunted Spooks, Brian. And the production of this 1920 comedy film was halted due to an accident involving Harold Lloyd while taking publicity shots at the start of filming in August 1919. He perhaps his most famous for his safety last motto.
Okay.
And he posed with what he believed to be a prop bomb with a fuse. It was like one of those little cartoon bombs.
Oh, no.
Like the round bombs with a little fuse. Yeah. The bomb turned out to be a real bomb, and it exploded in his hand, and it burned his face. I had no idea about this until doing the research for this episode. I know I've seen Harold Lloyd's work.
Did it blow his hand off?
It blew his thumb off and parts of his fingers. The bomb turned out to be real, exploded. It burned his face, temporarily blinding him, and resulted in the loss of a thumb and index finger of his right hand. And Lloyd, however, was a good sport about it, Brian. And
what are you going to do?
He said the pain was considerable, but trivial compared to what happened with his mental state. And he did resume filming the short film in January of 1920. And he was fitted with a glove. No. With artificial fingers, and he kept the accident unknown to the public. This might be why I never heard about it. Maybe I did in film school, but it didn't ring any bells for me. And he didn't want this. It's such a different frame of mind back then in 1920. He was afraid that the public might go to see his films out of pity for him, knowing that he lost part of his hand because of something that happened on set. So that's a fun little one, and I also like the title of the 1920 short, Harold Lloyd's short, Haunted Spooks. Haunted Spooks. So, yes, no one dies here, but a thumb and an index finger did.
That's tragic.
I just like the idea of, I mean, who the fuck?
Who keeps a live bomb on stage?
And then uses it and says, let's light it as for the picture. I think it's
Harold
fake.
Lloyd.
And where do they get it to begin with?
They lit it?
Are they that fucking lazy that it's like out like in minefields finding props? Just fucking make a prop.
Hey, about a bomb prop. It's a bomb.
Yeah. Hey, how hard is it? Get like an old tin and just put a fuse on it and paint it black.
Yeah, it's a black and white film anyway. Number five for me. I have a tight number five. They are both Tom Cruise films.
Mm. Good. I'm glad you have this on the list because so do I.
Oh, good. When filming Top Gun in September 16th, 1985, aerobatic pilot Art Scholl crashed his Pitts S2 camera plane off the Southern California coast near Carlsbad, and neither was ever recovered. Scholl was 53. He was a very well-known camera pilot. He actually, I have it here. He founded an aerobatic school and maintenance facility in Riverside and later Rialto, California in 1978. He produced several highly successful air shows at Miro Field, and Miro Field has since been renamed Art Scholl Memorial Field in his honor. But unfortunately, he tried to get the plane to spin intentionally in order to capture it on film. I have to assume it's ironically, maybe the scene where a goose dies.
He was called the real goose.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah, they consider him the real goose.
Oh, shit. Well, there you go. He was in that. He was trying to recreate that scene, I suppose, or put it onto camera, onto film. Observers watched the plane continue to spin as it descended past the planned recovery altitude. Scholl's last words over the radio were, "I have a problem. I have a real problem," after which the plane impacted the ocean at about 5 miles off the coast.
Yeah.
Sad.
I'm looking at the clock. I'm realizing this is going to be a short episode. That's unfortunate.
You have 10, though.
I know, but still, there's going to be crossover. I'm realizing the errors.
I think we'll be okay.
Number 8 for me.
No, I saw my tie.
Oh, okay.
Tom Cruise movie.
That's right.
American Made, 2017.
I didn't know about this one.
A stunt pilot, Alan D. Perwin, and Venezuelan co-pilot Carlos Burl were killed when their aircraft crashed during filming in Medellin, Colombia.
Medellin. And it wasn't a drug cartel that killed them? It was actually a crash.
That's rare. A third person on board the aircraft survived. So it was September 11th. They can always say they died September 11th. 2015.
No, they can't because they're dead.
Perwin died. Their relatives and loved ones can say that. They died in a plane crash in Colombia during the shooting of the film American Made, starring Tom Cruise.
Colombia.
Perwin was returning to Enrique Olaya Herrera Airport in Medellin. According to an official, the normal duration of the flight was 10 minutes and required a skilled pilot to clear the Andes and descend sharply into the steep valley around Medellin. In the crash, Colombian Carlos Burl was also killed, while American pilot Jimmy Lee Garland was seriously injured and rushed to a hospital. What?
So, was this part of the filming, or were they just leaving set?
I think they were... I think it was part of the filming because Perwin was prolific. When he died, directors he had worked with had posted Twitter tributes, such as Ben Stiller, F. Gary Gray, and Michael Bay. He is interred at Forest Lawn Cemetery.
I don't know how that that suggests that it was actually part of the shooting. From what I heard say, it sounded like he was going home.
He was arriving. Guys, remember that? He's not Colombian.
Now, have you seen American Made?
I have not.
Because that's like part of the plot, and I believe it's this airport, is that it's like the runway is not long enough
which would lead me to believe,
especially with the amount of weight that they had with the drugs on the plane that was up, and he had to like ascend very quickly to clear the that was a large you would love this fucking movie. This is a Brian movie. It's not one of those movies where you'll come in here and be like, you know, it's a movie that Anderson thought I would like, and boy was he wrong. This is a Brian movie. Like, okay. I'd stake my lefty on it.
All right, your left pinky.
I was talking testicle.
Okay, sure. Well, are you done with those now?
No, I don't know if I am. Number 8 for me.
Right.
This one, actually, I may have heard about it at the time, but unfortunately, you know, we live in such a crazy, chaotic world that things like this just kind of, sometimes they don't stick. And this is a movie that anyone listening knows I absolutely love. The Dark Knight, 2008.
Oh, yeah, someone died.
Cameraman, Conway Wickliffe, or Wickliffe.
They didn't make a turn or something, right?
Why do you got to step on everything?
Well, we're trying to do
it. You're like, hey, I know about this. Teacher, teacher, hey. I know. Can I get the answer?
Can you tell me what happened?
He didn't make a turn. All right. He was killed in 2007 on the set of The Dark Knight as he rode in a pickup truck driving parallel to a stunt car. The pickup missed a 90-degree turn and crashed into a tree, killing cameraman Conway Wickliffe. I hope I'm saying that right, because the last thing I want to do is, you know, say anything, mispronounce the deceased name. Something else I learned in this research is cameramen die, I think it's fivefold to everyone else on
They're
set
right in
that
there,
have
man.
Died. They die a lot more than other people do on sets.
They're in the shit.
Number 7. So that was my modern day one, The Dark Knight, 2008. I did not know. And that was actually just during rehearsals, like, it wasn't even while they were shooting.
Oh,
they were
really?
Rolling. Oh, he was just trying to, you know, get the shot down.
Sad.
Yeah. But now I'm going back to 1928, a little film called Noah's Ark. I think, are we allowed to laugh a little bit if it's like way back old timey days? Because this one kind of makes me chuckle a little bit. All right. Hear me out, Brian. Number 7 for me. Number 7, Noah's Ark, 1928. Everyone's favorite Noah, right? The 1928 film. In addition to being one of the first epic attempts at a biblical story, the 1928 film Noah's Ark involved a climactic scene that proved damaging to cast members. Michael Curtis's grand-scale depiction of the Great Flood involved the liberal use of 2.3 million liters, that's 600,000 gallons of water, as one would expect. Injuries and subsequent tragedy were similarly immense. 3 extras drowned in the ensuing chaos. 1 person injured his leg so badly that it had to be amputated. And 35 ambulances had to attend to the rest of the broken limbs and other serious ailments. Imagine the set, all the water gushing and all the sirens coming, and the 35 fucking ambulances back in 1928 going, what the fuck? How do you have 35 ambulances on call that could all get there?
Yeah, but that's the entire
35, the entire fleet.
That's everyone. That's the next town over.
I know it's sad people died, but you know they'd be dead by now anyway. So I think we can laugh. I think we're allowed to laugh.
Sure. It was a tragedy plus time equals comedy.
Open the floodgates, says Curtis. Michael Curtis. You know what he directed? What's movie that? You like?
What's that?
Casablanca.
Oh yeah, I guess so.
Fucking Casablanca. No one died in Casablanca.
Casablanca.
Mm-hmm. All right, so that's my 7 and 6.
Number 4 for me, I'm going back also, Anderson. This is probably on your list then if you're doing old-timey films. Do you have The Charge of the Light Brigade on your list?
I do not.
Oh, you don't?
Nope.
Oh, you're going to like this one then, because this involves 25 deaths. 25 deaths.
Tell me. I don't know how this was not on my list.
Well, because it's not human deaths. Horse deaths.
Oh, yeah. Of course, I saw this one, and I fucking skipped right over it because I didn't want to talk about the flying Ys and whatnot. I hate it, Brian.
The Charge of the Light Brigade, 1936, is directed by Michael Curtis.
Fuck that guy.
Michael Curtis?
Yeah, he's a cunt.
Is it same Michael Curtis?
Yeah, it is, of course.
Whoa, Michael Curtis.
He does not care about human life, nor human boredom with this fucking Casablanca.
Starring Errol Flynn and Olivia de Havilland, still alive at 103.
Who is?
Olivia de Havilland.
You know what she should do?
What's that?
She should hook up with Kirk Douglas.
Right. Is that, remember the
206-year-old sex. Right. Can you imagine? I can't. Oh, I don't want to. I don't want to imagine. I want to imagine that less than I want to imagine the fucking animals dying.
Do you want 25 horse dying, or do you want 206-year-old sex?
206-year-old sex. Let's like delve deep into that, because I don't want to hear about the horses being maimed.
During the filming of the charge sequence, a stuntman was killed when he fell off his horse and landed on a broken sword that was lying in the field, unfortunately wedged in such a position that its blade was sticking straight up. However, for the climactic charge, 125 horses were tripwired. Of those, 25 were killed outright or had to be put down afterwards. The resulting public furor caused the U.S. Congress to pass laws to protect animals used in motion pictures. Errol Flynn, who was a horseman, was so outraged by the number of horses injured and killed during the charge and by director Michael Curtis' seeming indifference to the carnage that at one point, as he was arguing with Curtis about it, he could not contain himself anymore and actually physically attacked him.
Good.
They were pulled apart before serious damage was done, but it put a permanent freeze in their relationship. And yeah, 25 horses died. And it led to, the ASPCA followed suit after Congress passed a law. They banned tripwires from films.
Good, good, good. Interesting choice of words, though. It caused a permanent freeze
on their relationship.
Yeah, it's just like the relationship ended. Like a freeze suggests that there'll be a thaw one day. You know what I mean?
Well, they did make subsequent films together, but they despised each other and would speak only when necessary on the set.
God, imagine how few capable people were working back then. Two had to work together.
Because Errol Flynn was a huge star. He had to be in, a certain number of pictures a year.
And Curtis was like making every movie that where maiming and death happened and boredom. Hmm. That's so fucked.
Yeah.
And the fact that like something like that had to happen for them to say, you know what, we should maybe protect animals in these motion pictures they're making out there.
They tripwired 125 and a quarter of the horses died. That's
fifth,
crazy.
A fifth. 100.
Yeah. You're right.
Number six for me is Top Gun.
What is that?
What was the name that you used in Top Gun?
Of the guy who died? Art Scholl.
Oh, okay. I've in my head, it's Art School, which is a cool fucking name. But you're right. It's Art Scholl.
Art School.
He died when his plane plunged in the Pacific when a inverted flat spin went wrong as he filmed backdrop scenes for Top Gun.
Mm-hmm. Sad.
1986 Top Gun. The new one, nearing completion, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Inside source.
The new Top Gun, nearing completion. And you didn't hear from me, but apparently there's more than one director working.
Oh, how about that? Is his name Tom Cruise?
More than one director working on that one. Number five for me. This involves 10 dead in a plane crash. That's a lot. 1930, my old-timey movie. Mm. Tragedy. Stricken. Such Men Are Dangerous, Brian, is
the name of the film?
Such Men Are Dangerous was a 1930 drama based partially on the disappearance of Belgian financier Alfred Lowenstein over the English Channel. As a result, the pilot of the film required extensive plane use over the water, which resulted in the deaths of 10 people. Here's how it happened. The crew was filming a parachute jump seen off the coast of Southern California right out here in our own backyard when the wingtips of two, not shoes, Brian, not shoes, wingtips of two Stinson Detroit aircraft. I think I nailed it.
That was good.
Stinson Detroiter.
Is it Detroiter?
Detroiter.
Detroit.
Aircraft collided. They collided in midair, Brian. This caused the planes to swing together and crash, exploding and killing everyone aboard, including director Kenneth Hawks, who was Howard Hawks' brother. You know Howard Hawks.
Yeah, of course.
He's a legendary director from way back in the old-timey days. And two military pilots also died. Jesus. Out of the 10 dead, only five bodies were recovered. Tragedy. Terrible. 1930. This is giving me anxiety, though, and regret, because now that I'm realizing and giving myself a pass to laugh or to chuckle at deaths of old-timey movies. There was one, and maybe it's on your list, but I doubt it, where like they did save a couple people. There was like a flood, and I can't even remember which one it was.
I didn't have that.
Two people, and they pulled them to shore. And they're like, oh, yeah, everyone was cheering. Great, they're saved. I shouldn't even be bringing this up because I don't know what movie it was. But then it turned out, oh, no.
Oh, no.
Quicksand.
And the movie? No.
And they died. Seriously? I swear to God. Oh, and now that I'm giving myself license to laugh, I want to include that one on my list, but it's not on my list, Brian. They saved the two actors from peril and placed them on quicksand.
And that movie was?
I don't know. Wait, hold on. You know what? Stall for time, because you know what? We're this is going to be a 30-minute episode.
Well, I can do number three.
Can you speak it slowly?
Yes, I can.
Oh, let's not do that.
Number three. 1997's Pleasantville. This was actually one of the tragedies that had certainly not a happy ending, but had a impact on the way films are made. Cameraman Brent Hirschman died when he fell asleep driving home after a 19-hour workday on the set of the film. Anderson, you've made films, both short and feature. Long workdays. Yes. It's just kind of how it goes sometimes.
Right. The truckers have like a term for it where like they keep themselves awake with cigarettes, and when the cigarette burns down, like it burns their fingers and wakes them up. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. A 19-hour workday on the set of the film. He was so exhausted he fell asleep on his drive home. Hirschman's death resulted in a wrongful death suit, claiming that New Line Cinema, New Line Productions, and Juno Pix were responsible for the death as a result of the lengthy work hours imposed on the set and spurred a call to limit filming hours. After Hirschman's death, co-workers drafted a petition asking for a 14-hour shooting limit on television and film sets. That's still a very long day. Dubbed Brent's Rule, it received more than 10,000 signatures, Anderson, and it actually spawned a documentary by legendary cinematographer, multiple Oscar winner Haskell Wexler. Mm-hmm. He made a documentary called Who Needs Sleep in 2006, which I flickfest. Actually, I was like, oh, that sounds familiar. And I looked back at my notes. I flickfested on our 2011 summer preview episode. Haskell, of course, has been on many, many, many movie sets. He's won multiple Oscars and did one for The Cuckoo's Nest. He's a legend in the cinematographer game. And he made a documentary that examined this issue, examined the death of Brett Hirschman, and talked basically discussed how, we should have shorter work days, like 14 hours, something reasonable, like a 14-hour work day.
Right. 14 hours is still very fucking long. It's very long. That was actually when we were doing groupers. I remember thinking, really, because we were shooting for 16-hour work days.
Right.
And I was like, can't we do like 17 or 18? Because we only had so long to shoot. We only went over one day. I'll be happy to say that only went over one day.
Were there any tragedies on the set?
No, actually.
Aside from the script.
It's a good one. No, there was actually no, there was almost a tragedy with the set because of the rain, but no, we got lucky. All right, good, I think I'm getting close to finding the quicksand.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I might be getting close, but I'll revisit that once you start talking again.
Good. This is the best weather show's ever gone.
Yeah. All right, number four for me. This one's a big one. And this one actually came up on our set because my partner and DP, Milan Janison, was adamant about including this in some of the slates that we did. And SOS is Safety for Sarah.
Oh, yeah.
And SOS, Safety on Set. So it's SFS. Yeah. So Midnight Rider, the Greg Allman story, which never got completed. The train hit the gurney, which hit camera assistant Sarah Jones, throwing her into the path of the locomotive. She was killed instantly. This is absurd and ridiculous that a movie with an actual budget could have this happen. So they were working on this, what they believed to be an abandoned train rail bridge where there was no escape because up very, very high.
They literally didn't know there were trains coming through?
They got bad information and a producer didn't do their due diligence, and they really thought that there were no trains using this line anymore. Because, you know, trains are archaic, and there's a lot of dead lines. There's a lot of, like, old train bridges and whatnot that just aren't used anymore in this country. And they didn't actually do the digging I would imagine they had no permits either, because if you get a permit, that'll be part of the process. Like, they'd be like, well, you can't have a permit here because there's a train that runs here at this time. They had no idea that trains would ever come down. They were setting up a dream sequence on the bridge, and Sarah was the second assistant camera, so she was right there in the thick of it, and they heard the train coming, and many people that were on the bridge were able to get clear, but she was not. And like I said, the gurney actually ended up hitting her,
Jesus,
and knocking her in front of the train. So yeah, it was. Can you just imagine being on that?
No, it's terrible. I mean, the film never got finished, I guess.
No. They did not. No.
Jesus.
Number three for me. This is on the cusp. It's right in the middle. It's 1956. It's a movie called The Conqueror. This one's a big one. This one affected a lot of people. The film was shot in Utah in 1955, Brian. The Conqueror. And of the 220 people who worked on the movie, almost half of them were later diagnosed with cancer.
Really? Was there an asbestos explosion?
In fact, by the early 1980s, 91 different people had contracted cancer and 46 of them had died of it. John Wayne was one of the affected individuals as well as many other actors and crew members. The exact reasons...
Was that a coal mine or something?
The exact reasons... Utah, Brian. Utah.
There's no coal mines in Utah?
Mormon breath is radioactive. Oh, okay.
That makes sense, yeah.
Mormon breath. The exact reasons why the location... this movie, why the location...
They probably tested nuclear bombs out there.
...was filmed, caused cancer, was not known, but many believe that it was from radioactive fallout from bomb tests that were done nearby. In 1956, that's kind of like where they really started saying, hey, let's try and bomb this Bikini Island and see what the, what our, you know, we know what it did. What the fuck's wrong with people? We know what it did to Nagasaki, right, and Hiroshima. Let's see what it does to this island, though. Let's see how big we can get it. I'm fucking like little boys with fireworks. You idiots. You know how many fucking nuclear bombs they let off just to like see? Like what more do you got to see?
You idiots, you killed the Duke.
You figure out that you can fucking decimate an entire continent and then just stop. You know, fucking wash your hands. It's like these goddamn updates. It's like the fucking updates, the computer updates. It's like, we got it. The apps work. You don't have to continue updating. Fucking fire the nerds. Sorry, nerds that are listening, but seriously, we don't need you anymore. The apps work just fine. We don't need you to make any more fucking bombs. They work just fine. Go home. Why? How do the nerds continue to say, no, you need me? Like this planned obsolescence of the materials that they create. How do we not see through that?
Well, it's only going that farther in that direction. You know, the nerds will only become more important.
The Conqueror in 1956 because of nerds doing fireworks. It's not even just nerd. It's the nerdy military fucks. Or the nerdy fucks that sell to the military, that are working for the military.
Yeah, the nerds.
Yeah. Nerds.
Number two for me. I can go on or as long or as short as we want about this because we've actually talked about this on the show before. It's probably the most well-known one. It's number two for me. It's the Twilight Zone, of course, the movie, the segment called Time Out. On July 23rd, 1982, Vic Morrow and child actors Micah Dinley, age 7, and Renee Shinyi Chen, age 6, were killed by a helicopter during production when it was caught in the pyrotechnics flying low at 25 feet. The tail rotor decapitated Morrow and Lee and crushed Chen to death. So an actor, Vic Morrow, and two children, Micah and Renee, were killed by this helicopter that was flying a little too low, or a lot too low, as it were. Lee and Chen were being paid under the table to circumvent California's child labor laws, which did not permit children to work at night. Director John Landis opted not to seek a special waiver, either because he did not think he would get permission for such a late hour, or because he knew he would not get approval to have young children in a scene with a large number of explosives. The casting agents were unaware the children would be involved in the scene. Associate producer George Fosley Jr. told the children's parents not to tell any firefighters on set the children were part of the scene and hid them from a fire safety official who also worked as a welfare worker. Do you want me to go on? I mean,
I'm looking for the fucking quicksand. I can't get any.
A fire safety officer was concerned that the blast would cause a crash, but did not tell Landis of his concerns. I'll give the epilogue here. The accident, which of course was a huge tragedy, led to one of the most prolonged lawsuits in film history and resulted in some major changes in filming codes. The accident led to civil and criminal action against the filmmakers, which lasted nearly a decade. Landis, Fosley, Wingo, and production manager Dan Allingham and explosive expert Paul Stewart were tried and acquitted on charges of manslaughter in a 9-month trial in 86 and 87. Morrow's family settled with an
appeal. Okay, all right, I'll cut you off.
The children's families collected millions of dollars from several civil lawsuits.
I would like to do an anti-ad First of all, to the fucking hacking cunts out there, enough, all right? Something's happened to my laptop so that it goes straight to Bing.
Oh, come on.
And it doesn't default to this Google, no matter how many times I go into the Chrome interface and the preferences, and it always defaults back to Bing. And I don't realize it until I'm getting furious and I keep searching for things in the URL in the menu bar, and I'm looking for like a certain thing, and it's just giving me shit answers. And I'm like, oh, wait, maybe because I'm on a horrible search engine. Is it Bing? And I look, oh, it's Bing. And then I do the exact same fucking search on Google, bang, right to what I want.
Bang.
Bing, bang. You're the fucking worst. You're good for looking at porn, nothing else. Get the fuck out of the way and stop infecting computers and making people use your shitty product. So I did my search.
I think we can eliminate Bing as a potential sponsor.
And here we go with the quicksand. I found it. Thank you, Google, for helping me out here.
Before you get there, can I give a happy ending to the Twilight Zone?
Even though you know what I had for dinner last night, Google, you fucking creepy fucks.
That's right. Sorry, not a happy ending, but a silver lining, I suppose, of the Twilight Zone tragedy that dragged on for a decade. Following the incident, accidents during filming between 82 when it happened and 1986, the next 5 years, fell by 69.6%.
69.
That's right. That's good news. It almost cut it by 69%.
You know who Vic Morrow's daughter is?
No.
Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Oh, is he with Jennifer?
Janet Leigh.
Janet Leigh and Vic Morrow had Jennifer.
No, because her name is Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Well, what was it? So what?
I mean, no. She didn't take her mom's name.
Oh, okay.
See what I'm saying?
I'm confused.
Why are you confused? Jennifer Jason Leigh's dad is Vic Morrow.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
I don't know why.
Sorry, I thought you were trying to make a joke. I was
she's the daughter of Barbara Turner and actor Vic Morrow.
Oh, okay.
Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Jamie Lee Curtis is Janet Leigh's daughter.
Yes. That's why Janet Leigh was, or Jamie Lee Curtis was in that movie that you had me watch that was not that great, the Hitchcock.
Oh, that was awesome.
Psycho. And remember, she's like, I was never going to do it. People asked me to do it plenty of times to recreate. And I'm like, no, my mother is better than me. And I'm not going to do that to her memory until James Gunn asked me to. And I'm like, James, for you, I'll do anything. And it was Scream Queens, right? Scream Queens.
I think that was it.
I'm sorry. I feel like what I'm doing is verbatim as to what happened in that documentary.
Are we doing the quicksand or what's happening?
Here we go. Quicksand. Thank you, Google. Across the Border, 1914, the name of the movie, Across the Border.
I'm going to bing this shit.
On July 1st, 1914, while on location in Cannon City, Colorado, cast member Grace McHugh was filming a scene where her character was crossing the Arkansas River in a boat. I'm just having I'm imagining like her grandson listening to this and going, really? I like these guys, and now they're making fun of my grandma?
I didn't make fun of these guys? How dare you?
When the boat capsized, camera operator Owen Carter immediately jumped into the river to save her. He dragged her onto a sandbar that was actually quicksand. The rest of the film crew watched helplessly as they were sucked into the quicksand and drowned.
Terrible.
Here's the weird thing, though. Like, I think we've all learned here in the year 20, by the year 2019, that quicksand's not really a real thing.
I was about to say, I grew up thinking quicksand would be the way that I died, and here we are. And I've
thank you, Corolla, for that, for stealing that line.
I don't think that's
said that numerous times by watching. You forget sometimes that I worked on Loveline, Brian. You can't just steal his material. It's offensive. But yeah, he said from watching Johnny Quest. Oh. It's true, you are a thief. From watching Johnny Quest, he said he thought there was like a 50% chance that he would die from quicksand growing up. But yeah, quicksand's not a real thing. You don't really see it in popular culture anymore. It's like growing up,
it was everywhere.
Action adventure characters would be sucked into quicksand quite often. They would usually get out, but
or they would like sink slowly into the sort of
they'd grab a vine. There's usually a vine within reach, but you don't see that premise so much anymore.
All right, do you have actual number three or four or whatever?
I do. Moving on. Sorry, my sickness is really coming on now. This is a good one.
You're feeling good.
It's a good one and it's a bad one at the same time, but number two for me. Gone in 60 Seconds 2, Brian. You remember the original Gone in 60 Seconds? You
ever seen that? The Nick Cage movie?
No, Brian, you're the worst. You're the worst human being that's ever existed in the world. It's kind of harsh, I guess.
Wow.
No, there isn't a secret sequel to Gone in 60 Seconds. that you're just finding out about. I'm not going to read this fucking verbatim. There's way too much.
You know, this is my number one. So why don't you skip it and let me do it? Because
really,
yeah.
Oh, good, good. Yeah. I thought you were just. I believed you. That's pretty good, bud.
It is my number one.
All right, cool. Yeah. Number one for me then. Going old timey, and this is number one. Even if I wasn't going back and forth between, this is a film called The Viking, 1931. Okay. Did you come across this one?
Did not come across.
This is the one that led to this here topic that really? I read about this probably a year and a half, 2 years ago, and I'm like, we should just do this because I'd never heard of The Viking, 1931 film. It was not taught in film school. It did not come up in any of my research before me reading this article about tragedies, and this is unfucking believable. The Viking had plenty of impressive footage of ships, as one would imagine. Oddly enough, though, the Viking didn't have any Vikings in it and wasn't really about Vikings, which is weird. I've not seen The Viking, I should mention. The first movie to record sound and dialogue on location. So it is of note for that reason. The first movie to record sound and dialogue on location, 1931.
It's impressive.
Didn't even contain Vikings. However, it is likely better known for an accident that resulted in the largest loss of human life in film history to date.
Damn.
To date. Thank God. And we got to hope that it never gets any bigger than this.
Record you don't want to see broken.
Right. Director Varick Frissell. Varick Frissell had noticed after screening the film that it needed some more establishing shots from the Newfoundland Grand Banks. He set out with a small crew. He joined the SS Viking, which is a featured ship on the film, Brian, and it got trapped in ice near the Horse Islands on March 15th, 1931. Shortly thereafter, an explosion happened on the boat in the rear of the ship, and it ended with the deaths of at least, it's so long ago, and the records were so poorly kept at this time, that they don't even know the exact number. At least 27 men were killed on that ship.
Jesus.
Getting the reshoots.
Were they film crew or are they like military?
And just they weren't military. They were everyone that was on the boat, you know, it was like all hands on deck, pardon the pun, but they were there to, you know, help with the shooting and the reshoots. And I believe it was an actual, like he, much like that movie, Waking Fright, where the director got actual kangaroo hunters, mm-hmm. and he said he was making a documentary, and he went out with them to document them shooting helpless kangaroos like the fuckheads that they are. This was if I recall in my research, it was a seal hunting expedition that he doubled as garnering footage. So it may have been some of the cunty seal hunters as well that probably deserved to be blown to bits.
Give yourself some solace, think about that.
Yeah, but at least 27 people died, and it was in the name of getting the shots for The Viking, 1931. That's my number one. And then my number two is what Brian's number one is, so I guess we're moving on to that.
Number one for me is, yes, like Anderson alluded to, the sequel to Gone in 60 Seconds called Gone in 60 Seconds 2. This was a film that was supposed to be released, I guess, around 1989. It's an unfinished film. Director-actor H.B. Helicki, who directed the original in 1974, was killed in Buffalo, New York, when a water tower he was planning to topple fell prematurely, hitting a telephone pole that then struck him in the head. The film was scrapped as a result of the incident. Helicki married, sadly, had just married Denise Shakarian in 1989, shortly before he began filming. According to the LA Times, quote, Helicki had been forced to buy $8 million in insurance to make the sequel after a local official accused him of lax safety planning. That's a harbinger of frightening things. Sunday's shooting, this is a contemporaneous article. Sunday's shooting in an abandoned industrial park had called for a tractor trailer to crash through a series of parked cars before ramming into a support for the 100-foot-tall water tower, bringing it down. Workers had just made cuts through one of the tower supports, according to witnesses. When the tower began to creak, workers scrambled out of the way, but Helicki was unable to escape the falling pole.
It is kind of a crazy story that the director, the creator of the entire scene and set and all the people that were there and the actual falling of the tower in question, he was the mastermind behind all of it. And he was the only one to actually be affected
it.
To the point of death. And what he would also, he did it with his other movies, in particular Gone in 60 Seconds, the first one, the original. He would shoot the big climactic action sequence first, get it out of the way and then shoot the rest of it.
Oh.
So that's what happened with this one. He was shooting the big, giant climactic end sequence first, and then he was going to go back and shoot the rest of the movie, which happens quite often. They want to get the big stuff out of the way. And obviously, after the director and creator of it died, they didn't move forward. And I don't know if you saw any of the footage of the actual sequences that he was shooting, but it was, especially of its time, was pretty impressive.
Really?
Good looking
stuff.
Is the
collapse on camera?
You see the water tower go over. Yeah, you don't see the telephone pole that killed him, but you see the water tower go over. And you remember, I didn't look this up, and I should have, but remember the Beverly Hills Cop? And I remember watching it while I was young and being really like impressed with the creativeness and the awe of destruction when one of the nefarious characters took a big rig and was just plowing through.
It was the opening scene, wasn't it?
Perhaps. What year, though?
Because that was 84, I think.
All right, well, then this is just biting off that, because that's what a lot of everything that was leading to what caused the water tower to collapse was this guy in a big rig just mowing cars down. Yeah, but it was those were the stunts that were occurring, and there's a lot of edited footage of this actual end sequence. I think it's like a good 8 minutes or so of the actual end sequence of a movie that was never created, never finished. So that's my number two and your number one. So look at that,
there you go. There's
continuity matching there up. But Brian, I feel bad about this episode. It's only 42 minutes, and what the fuck?
We'll talk slower for your number one.
I already did my number one.
What's your
number Viking?
One?
Come on, Brian.
What was your three and four?
Brian, you think that I skipped over a couple?
I think you skipped some.
I did not. Well, why don't we recap? And I don't want to just like fucking bluster for the sake of blustering to burn time. But 10-1 for me was Comes a Horseman, where the guy got dragged to his death, and they actually included it. Haunted Spooks, where Harold Lloyd, publicity pictures, but still nonetheless, it was for the short film where his hand got exploded. The Dark Knight, cameraman Conway Wycliffe was killed in the rehearsals. Noah's Ark, where a bunch of people drowned and 35 ambulances showed up. Top Gun, where Art Scholl, or Art School, as I call him, died. He was a real goose. Number five was Such Men Are Dangerous, where 10 people died in a plane crash. Number four for me was Midnight Rider, the Greg Allman story, where poor Sarah was killed on set with the gurney. The Conqueror, where all those people died of the cancer years later because of shooting in Utah where the nerds had made Fallout cancerous. Number two for me, Gone in 60 Seconds. Two, which is Brian's number one. And number one for me was The Viking, where at least 27 people were exploded on the ship.
Number five for me was a tie between American Made and Top Gun, both aerial disasters in Tom Cruise movies. Number four, The Charge of Light Brigade, where sadly 25 horses passed away and led to some congressional action over how animals are treated on set. Number three, Pleasantville. Brent Hirschman died when he fell asleep on his way home after a 19-hour day. Twilight Zone, of course, number two, very famous and maybe the best known on-set tragedy. And number one, Gone in 60 Seconds, too.
Now, a giant one that you left off the list that we both did, but of course it's Brandon Lee. I think I'd imagine most all of our listeners, if we did a top five listener list, that would probably be number one on theirs. That was a huge story at the time. It was unbelievable. It continues to be unbelievable. I don't know how much you read about that at the time. A lot of people to this day think that it was because they actually used a gun that had a bullet in it. But
I've heard conflicting reports. I heard about the effects guy wanted to be a more impressive thing, so he put more gunpowder, a different kind of blank in there or something. Or I've also heard that that there was a bullet put in where the blank was supposed to be. I've heard many different conflicting reports.
What about the Asian Mafia? You hear about that one?
No, I did not.
That's a real one.
Is that a real theory?
There is a conspiracy out there, yes. So that would be number one on a lot of lists. I think that it was like they have, I guess some of the guns that they used or used back in the day for a while too, after there's rules on set, which I think have become more lax, but you can, I mean, I didn't do the research, but I mean, if I had like a week at my disposal, I could put together a compilation of what happened in the years following, immediately following Brandon Lee's death on The Crow, where you could not on set point a gun directly at another actor. And they had to use camera angles to make it look like you're pointing the gun, but many times they failed to do so. So you could see that in a number of movies in the years following The Crow, you can see like the gun's not trained on the person that they're actually aiming it at, and it's a distracting. Yeah, it's distracting.
I didn't realize that.
It'd be there might be a video or a study out there on that, but I remember noticing that numerous times. What else? I don't really have any others. Twilight Zone, but you covered that. And
Deadpool 2, there was a death on set. Blade Runner 2049, there was a death on set of a construction worker.
Harry Potter, there was his stunt double was paralyzed from the neck down from being thrown against a wall. Terrible.
The Dirt, there was a notable crew member. Was Louis DiVincenti suffered an electric shock while de-rigging a set in New Orleans. Yeah.
As much as I like The Dirt, I mean, that's a sucky one to go out on.
Second, third, it is kind of terrible when it's a bad movie, right?
Yeah, it's like my uncle died on Space Jam. Oh, that sucks.
The Lone Ranger, someone drowned.
Ugh. Which Lone Ranger?
The new one, the Johnny Depp one. G.I. Joe Retaliation, someone was killed while dismantling a set, also in New Orleans. New Orleans, cursed.
Well, it is. I mean, we all know that.
Dark Knight, Jumper. These are all bad movies.
Dark Knight, Jumper? No, not you Dark, say Dark Knight, Dark Jumper? Knight, these no, are all bad no, movies?
Not Dark Knight. Obviously, Jumper.
This is the first one we've done that's less than an hour. We need to get Listener X back in here or come up with, what we should do is have some kind of opening where we like do news and notes or something like that.
We'll do better next time, guys.
Sorry. Honestly, if I could call in sick to a job, which I never called in sick on Loveline once.
Really?
I'm just not the call in sick.
There are many nights where you probably should have.
I know. But I would have called in sick this week to the film vault, but really? It was a big week. We had two episodes to do, and this guy's sick, and he's also got his hands fucking full.
That is true. You got a movie to make.
I have a movie to make. Speaking of which, many of you guys I know are aware of it already, but I'm talking about all that shit over at Cinematics. And I hope you enjoyed our extra talk that we did on the most recent, this will be dated if people hear this years from now, but the most recent spoiler episode we did of yesterday. I meant to mention this on the regular episode, but our little added conversation about the homeless folks that we both encountered recently. I meant to mention that we did that on the bonus.
That's true.
Spoiler discussion of yesterday.
Well, people listening know because they're Patreon members.
that did not belong at the to tag as a tag at the end of the yesterday spoiler review, but we went on and
Where's
on
my
about
bike?
It. Fuck my holes. All right, sorry.
Drop.
Yeah. All right. So that's about it. Anything else, Brett? Right. I'd like to thank Parker Projections, who you're hearing right now, for providing us with the music for this Patreon bonus episode. And
that's just about it. Thanks to you guys for being subscribers. It means a lot to us.
And until next time, we do it for them. Oh, there you go, Brett. Us from the past. Back when we were good, huh?
Hey, you sounded great.
Fresh-faced.
I was probably, given the mid-2019, I was probably taking my stand-up comedy class and getting ready for Laughs with Bald Brian. So thanks for supporting that if you did that.
Did you confirm that's 2019? I thought it was 2018. No?
I have it here in my notes, 2019.
All right, so it's pre-COVID, and we had our whole lives ahead of us.
Things were looking up.
You could really tell the difference. Like we had a pep in our step back then, and now listen to us. I'm melting in the garage.
Yeah, we're broken.
All right, we're back next week. We'll be talking Bullet Train next week, as well as a couple. Oh, geez. I'm glad that I got there. Jeez, I almost totally biffed it, Bri. We will be watching, TJ has assigned us a movie. I meant to do this on the last episode. TJ has assigned us a movie, Weathering With You, Brian, and it is a treat. Weathering With You, it's available on HBO Max. You will recognize the style because it is a particular style of movie, one that is in our blind spot. I'll leave it at that. It is animated. I'll leave it at that. How about that? It's Japanese. I'll leave it at that. Weathering With You, 2019.
You're not leaving anything. You're still going.
I'll leave it. Weathering With You, 2019's Weathering With You. Thanks to assigner TJ, we will be flick-fasting that next week along with Bullet Train and something else. Do you have a movie to assign me, Brett?
I do. I owe you a movie from last week. I'm going to give you a easy watch, both in terms of I don't think it'll take a lot of brain power. I think people will be talking about it, and you can watch it while you're traveling because it is streaming on Netflix. And it comes out today. You and I will be talking about The Gray Man, the new effort from the Russo brothers, starring Ryan Gosling and Chris Evans and Ana de Armas, for that matter. So we'll be talking The Gray Man the next time you and I record.
The Gray Man. I've heard great things about this movie, Bri.
Yeah, same. It's supposed to be pretty middling, but it's
why are
it's
you notable. Doing this?
It's notable, and I'm thinking of you because I know you're going to be traveling, and you're probably going to have to sneak away to watch while the wife and boy are asleep.
Yeah. Isn't it 2.5 hours or something obscene?
No, it's 2 hours.
Mm. All right.
If it was long, I wouldn't assign it to you.
Should we gamble on Bullet Train? Caught up. Yeah. Why don't we do that? Why don't we gamble on Bullet Train? Give a little added value to this rep, and then get out of here, huh?
Well, let's go ahead and do that. There's almost certainly no score. We're recording this 2 full weeks ahead of release. Yeah, let's give it a shot.
All right. On three. Yes. Yes, dearie.
Why not?
Wait. Okay, yeah, on three. And we can't pay off Nope yet because we'll pay off Nope. We'll pay off both on the next live episode.
Perfect.
Last I checked, Nope was actually dead heat. Like we were both 8 points off.
Above 81% is the do or die. That's the Mason Dixon right there.
81 would make it a tie. And then what? Avery gets to assign to something? Is that what happens?
Ugh. Why should we reward that? You know what? We pay him. Offer it up if we tie from here going forward. If we tie, let's let one of our contributors, like a Jordan Wolf or a Mitch Burns or something like that.
Oh, my God. Do you understand how infuriated he is right now? Why? I'm infuriated for him.
Why? What? Who?
Giovanni.
He's assigned us movies in the past. We did.
He's
this.
Like, here it comes. Like, because Gio's done so much work for us. And
yes, Gio is a contributor. We appreciate you, but we have let Gio assign us a film in the past.
All right, but how do we make it fair? Okay, whatever. What do we order it? So like, Gio has assigned us things in the past. All right. You facilitate this. All right. How about that, Brad? It was your idea. You facilitate this. You figure this out if we are tied. Maybe this is much ado about nothing, and maybe we won't be tied. But if we are tied, you're going to figure out how it's fair and who gets to assign us to the next movie. All right. Because it's a real value. It's a real fucking value. All right.
I'll take care of that.
Thank you. All right. On Bullet Train, here we go. Our guesses for the Rotten Tomato score of Bullet Train on three. Are you ready? Are you ready?
I'm ready.
1, 2, 83.
90. Okay. All right.
You want to check it out?
A little too high. I feel bad about that. It's a regret.
God.
Okay, I'm sure there's no score I can Google.
Maybe.
It.
You never know, but maybe. Go ahead. You love to be on there. Just push refresh like you do.
How dare you?
What did you say? What was your score? 90?
90. I mean, 84. Mm-hmm. Bullet Train. As far as I can tell, I don't think there's anything on here. No.
It's his first movie since Atomic Blonde, right? That he's directed, so should be interesting.
The
trailer
did,
looks great.
Am I crazy, or did he do Nobody?
No, he didn't do Nobody. Nobody was the Russian guy that did Hardcore Henry. Ilya.
David Leitch. Leitch directed. Hold on, I got it right here in front of me. They did not direct Hobbs and Shaw. Fuck you. Oh, he directed
Atomic Blonde.
He did do Hobbs and Shaw. I was totally right about that.
Ilya Naishuller is who directed Nobody. Hardcore Henry.
Yes.
Director.
After Atomic Blonde, David Leitch did Deadpool 2. He did Hobbs and Shaw, and now, of course, Bullet Train.
I don't know if I saw a Deadpool 2. Hey, whatever. It doesn't matter. All right, let's get out of here.
Wait, you didn't see it? Well, I think you did. That's God, whatever. What a fun movie.
No. Let's go.
All right. I don't have any notes in front of me, so whoever our featured artist is, you are great. Check them out, andersonandbryan.com. We'll have some, what should we call it, Amazon purchases for you next time, as well as gambling recaps of the last two. And I don't know what else. Thanks, Mitch Burns. Thanks, Jordan Wolf, Giovanni, Mike Cole, the TFV on Facebook. The Film Vault on Facebook, The Film Vault on Twitter. And where else are we?
Hey,
The
listen
Film
to
Vault
our-
on Patreon.
Listener art is that I talked about it a couple weeks ago. It's me throwing something at a poor duck, wearing glasses. It looks a lot like you, Brian, and it says, fuck that duck. And it's come to us from Carlos A. Pompa.
Carlos A. Pompa.
It's been a long time since I got that years and years ago. So I'm finally using it here. And I'm glad I stretched that. I squeezed that in. All right. Let's get out of here.
All right. Good talking to y'all. And until next, hope you enjoyed the classic episode. And until next time.
We do it for Van Gogh.